Blog Talk Radio.
You're tuned in to Let's Talk Urban with host Felicia Bradshaw
at Urban Grapevine Magazine Project,
your number one source for the hottest author in urban fiction talk. Get put on. Yes. Book it at let's.talk.urban1@gmail.com. Boom.
Our topic tonight will be bosses, and our guest will be the boss, Nini Capri. Before we bring her in, I'd like to do I want to say a short introduction, but it is Nini Capri, so it won't be that short. So, Nini Capri is an urban fiction author, or as it has been termed, street literature. She came on the scene in 2001. Breaking boundaries with her first title, The Pussy Trap. Nini signed with Wahida Clark Presents Publishing and then began to build her personal brand, which has been coined #trapping. Nini Capri spent the first 18 years of her life without her father, who was serving a life sentence for murder. Raised on the streets of North Jersey by a mother and grandmother in Wilson Place and Mechanic Street Project. Being heavily influenced by her surroundings, she went headfirst into the street. Once her grandmother passed in 92, the only crutch she would have to get through it was alcohol. Being a 16-year-old high school dropout with very little work experience, she picked up on the neighborhood trades, which only pushed her further into the streets and spun her totally out of control. It would be many brushes with death that would present a fork in the road and provide an opportunity for change. At 18, she met Wahida Clark, who quickly placed her under the wing, relocated her to Georgia, and put her on the road to success. Now, that's a mentor. In 1999, Wahida, a second mother to her, was given 10 years in the federal penitentiary, throwing Nini totally off course and into a small bout of depression. However, Wahida would not accept failure from her on any level. So she continued to mentor and encourage her from her prison cell. Through Wahida's tutelage and the support of Nini's mom, Birdie, she went back to school and got her GED, then her AAS in legal studies, and then on to attend Temple University to continue her education. Currently, Nini Capri holds a BA in philosophy, pre-law, and is on her way to law school to pursue a law degree. Also active in the Literary Art Society, Parents of Murdered Children, and Psi Alpha Delta. Nini is the assistant director and Prodigal Sons and Daughters Redirection Services Incorporated in Trenton's chapter, teaching and mentoring female and male inmates, preparing them for what awaits them on the other side of the wall. Also works with deters and redirects our youth to become productive members of society. The driving force to all of her accomplishments is her daughter, who is the motivation for every step she takes. Nini is the author of The Pussy Trap, Pussy Trap 2, I like saying that word, The Kiss of Death, The Pussy Trap 3, Death by Temptation, Trust No Bitch, and Trust No Bitch 2, Deadly Silence, a collaboration with D. Cash, Street Lit. Also a short story entitled Shattered, and the anthology Love is Blind, presented by Boo Jackson, in which 100% of the proceeds are donated to Battered Women's Shelter to help with the fight against domestic violence. She has recently signed with G Street Chronicles, in which she released her latest novel, Painted Lies, Fear and Death and Dreamweaver. See, Nene's been busy. Also, the CEO of Boss Lady Publishing, Nene Capri, has also put on her agent hat, signing her first celebrity client, porn star Roxy Reynolds, to G Street Chronicles with her new novel, Secrets of a Porn Star. With success in the full view, Nene looks forward to the next level of her career and her life. She lives by the motto, good things come to those who wait, but only what's left by those who hustle. So we'd like to welcome Miss Nene Capri to the platform.
Hey, how you doing?
How are you?
How are you?
I'm driving out
man,
now.
I'm maintaining. I'm in here. I took a quick track break. I'm over here writing Tainted 2, trying to get that ready for my readers so they could be into that. And just riding on this high of dropping the Pussy Trap Part 4, The Shadow of Death. So I'm excited. I'm excited for what's going on.
I'm excited. I like that word.
Thank you. I know. I heard you say that. I said Felicia so bad. Yeah.
I didn't used to like the way it sounded when it come out of people's mouths, but I don't know.
I know. My mom, when I'm promoting the book, I'll just say P-Trap, depending on where I'm at. If my mom is there, she'd be like, don't say P-Trap. They're going to go in the store looking for the wrong book. You got to say the word. Just tell them what
just
it is.
Say the
so
word.
They'll know what the I just say it. So. Just go ahead and let it roll off your tongue.
That is a word your mom can. Just
yeah.
Say the P-word.
Just say it. Just go ahead on and say it. So what's going on with you tonight, Miss Felicia? Yes.
I'm all right. I'm busy, you know, but I love busy. Better busy than
yes, busy is a blessing.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Very much.
Yeah,
so.
Busy
and
is
I
a
see
blessing.
You both, and you can tell you what blessings are. So let's talk about, let's start from the beginning. I don't even know if that's the beginning, but. Let's start with the trust no bitch.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Where does it stem from? Where's the title? Because it's very strong. Where is it coming from?
I worked with Cash, Street Lit Author. As you know, both of us were authors on Wahida Clark Present Publishing. Cash's breakout novel was Trust No Man. Cash had went solo, independent, a few years ago, between 1 and 2 years ago, he had went independent, and he had dropped his own titles. When I was coming to the end of my contract, he was like, you know, Nene, you want to do something with me? You know, we went to Wahida. She was like, sure, you know, y'all go ahead, and, you know, Nene could be able to, you know, do something on the side. It's always good to have an extra check. So she was like, yeah, you got the blessing. So me and Cash went on ahead. He was like, since I'm the trust no man dude, he was like, won't we do trust no bitch? And I was like, yo, that's crazy. So he had the theme in his head. He came to me. He was like, I have been brewing on this story, Nene. This is what I was thinking about. And when he said it, you know, we just went. It was like I built a couple of characters, a couple of men, a couple of women. He built a couple of men. We started putting it together. We wrote Trust No Bitch in about 2 weeks. I mean, we was just up all night vibing back and forth. He'll write 3 chapters, send them to me. I'll read them right quick. I'll touch them. Then I send them back to him, send him 2 fresh more chapters. I mean, we just dug in and just went back and forth. And before you know it, it was like brilliance. It was like music. It came together really, really well. So, yeah, it was good. And it's a hell of a concept. You know what I'm saying? It's every day you got people crossing each other. You know what I'm saying? And a lot of times, like we say in the book, sometimes the bitch you can't trust is not a female. Sometimes it's a dude. You know, you got these dudes running around here with more, you know, bitch tendencies than females. Gossiping, carrying bones back and forth. You're like, wait, where you get that from? Who? You know, back in our day, you know, you didn't have that type of behavior. You know what I'm saying? Men was men. They wasn't in women business, women gossip. You know what I'm saying? Nowadays, they at the daggone foot of it. They starting it. So, you know, it just shows both sides of the coin. Females that you can't trust and dudes who's definitely walking around with those qualities that you definitely cannot trust. So, yeah, we touched on it all.
Yes, y'all have. And you know what? There is a serious loyalty issue, you know, amongst minorities, shall I say, and especially in our strongest industries. And that's the bad thing. That is in our strongest industries. So then you go on and you write, let's talk about the pussy trap. Right.
I wrote pussy trap first. Then I wrote trust no bitch parts 1, 2, and 3. I wrote that after I started with the pussy trap. I started there.
Now, did you pussy trap 1, 2, and 3 consecutive, or do you bounce around? And because I noticed some people are most authors. That are going to do, that they know they're going to do a continuing series. All right, like the Pussy Trap 1, and then, you know, readers are like, wow, and then you go over here and you write, you know, part 1 to this book, or did you just do the Pussy Trap straight through? I'm not sure.
I did part 1, 2, and 3. When I got to 3, I wasn't really planning on doing a part 4, but I had felt, you know, a little bit in my spirit for it as it was developing, and I went on ahead and I penned the part 4, but it took me a minute to make everything come together because I write that book with so much suspense and having you on the edge of your seat, and there's so many secrets. I went on ahead and I penned Trust No Bitch series 1, 2, and 3 real quick, boom, 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 back to back. I penned Tainted and dropped that under D Street Chronicles, and I tied Tainted into the Trap series. And I put out Trap 4, and now Tainted 2 is coming out. So it's like a back and forth between the two series where each character stand alone, but they're going to meet each other. And it's going to be a hell of a meeting. And then we're just going to end it there.
Because, you know, I've been following the Pussy Trap through audio. I don't be having time to really flip pages. So
I know. We're waiting. And you're waiting for book 2 and 3 while he's just trying to get that together right now.
Huh?
Oh my God! And I like
the reader. What is going on? Look,
man, you know everybody got
pages, and that we really need to know the audio. I think
busy
people.
Yeah, you do. Because you can listen to it anytime.
Anytime. I don't care what you're doing.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So, and she's working on that now. So hopefully. Between the summer and the winter, 2 and 3 will be out. So we'll see. I'll keep everybody posted, though.
Will it be the same reader?
It should be, because I love his voice. He is phenomenal. He is phenomenal. Yes. I love his voice. So I hope he does get the chance to do the book 2 and 3, because it's like you can't really tell. Like, you feel like it's not a man reading for women and men. It's like the way he goes in and out of the characters. That's Mr. Gates.
Right.
Mr. Gates is phenomenal. He does a phenomenal job at making you feel each person's feeling, emotion, and movement. So, yeah, I hope he does get to do it. He's a phenomenal reader.
Right, because he don't, and it's not like he's going back changing voices. It's just the way he reads it makes it.
Yes,
a
it's
good
the way. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Absolutely.
I want to know about Mimi Capri. I know we read your bio, and you know, and it takes a minute for us to write a decent bio, and everything's incorporated, but it's like robotic. What about the in-between stuff? You know, Mimi, you were raised, you said, by your grandmother and your mom, right? And feeding environment in the project, right? When your grandmother passed, how old was your daughter here?
No, I just had my princess. I didn't have my princess until I was almost 27. I was about to turn 27 when I had my daughter. All of my runnings and everything that was going on with me was going on from the age of maybe about 11 years old. Between 11 and 12 years old was when I really cut loose and got into the streets. My grandmother was basically raising me. Like, my mom was, you know, we was in the same town, but we didn't live together. You know, I stayed in my grandmother's house. My mom had did a little stint behind the wall, and when she came out, you know, she got my brother, and I basically wanted to stay with my grandmother because that was my heart. I had always been with her, and that was where I wanted to be, but it gave me a lot of freedom to do a lot of things because my grandmother had me in so many activities. It was like a must in our house. You had to take dance. You had to take ballet. You had to take tap. You had to, you know, you had to do charm school. You had to, you know, my grandmother was old school. A woman had to have poise, you know, regardless of what you was doing, always conduct yourself as a lady. So you had to model, you know, you had to have singing classes, like, you know, but it gave me a lot of freedom. And being out a lot got me in a lot of stuff, you know, even though she tried, you know, her best. You know, she worked and, you know, she tried to keep me in things, but it kept me outside. It kept me around people. And, you know, being in that type of environment, you know, being a young girl and always very shapely and, you know, red-skinned and long, pretty hair, I was always out, you know, always attracting, you know, the attention of older men. And, you know, as I write about a lot of them, you know, in my book is a lot of experiences. My character, Kaysan, is a lot of what I went through. Girl, you know, being out there and, you know, attracting those attentions of older men with money and cars and, you know, all of that, it just put me in different cycles and different spheres of activity, you know, and exposed me to the streets. Go ahead.
How are you stopping the cycle?
Well, for one, you know, when we turn 18 years old, and we changed everything about ourselves when we got with Wahida. We broke, you know, we broke the cycle completely, you know, by delving into reading, by delving into studying. I quit smoking. I quit drinking. So those are things I haven't done in over 20-something years. I became a vegetarian. I put strong convictions in myself and in my character that I live by spiritually, you know, emotionally, and those are things that I put into my daughter, you know, I homeschool her, you know, I keep her with me, you know, I keep her active and busy, but I make sure that she knows the real about the streets. I don't lie to her, but she's into so many other activities. Like, she don't talk on the phone, she don't do internet and all of that. She reads, she writes, she creates, she has her own business. So I'm just trying to put things into her at this age. Which part? Yeah, where do you want me to go back to?
When you first started saying it, I'm like, well, that sounds a little sheltered. But no, I see the outcome, and it's coming out really early. She has a business.
Yes. Yes, she does. She's 13, and she has, yes, she has her own jewelry line, KB Jewelry Box, in which she does customized pieces. She makes a lot of jewelry for my clients, people who are Eastern Stars, females who are Eastern Stars. She does a lot of bracelets and necklaces and different little pieces, custom made, and she does that, and she's just her own little entity, you know. She picked up at like 11 years old, told me, I know who I am, you know, I want dreads, mom, you know, I'm going to be a real spiritual person, I have these crystals, she meditates and exercises, and she's her own person. She reads.
You want to hang out over here?
Know. Yeah, I know, everybody. I wish I could do it again. I always say she's my best work. Like, she's the best thing I ever did in life. And I'm blessed. I'm really grateful that, you know, I don't have a typical teenager who wants to run the streets. And as long as she could swipe my credit card and get her little items in her room where she makes, you know, terrariums and, you know, all kinds of things, she is at peace. So I'm blessed. Yeah, I'm really, really blessed.
Wow.
Breaking the cycle, breaking the cycle.
That's right. I mean, I don't think a lot of the cycles get broken because I think their moms don't even know they're there. They ain't even paying attention.
Mm-hmm. No, they're not. And it's not like they don't want to pay attention. It's just that the attention is so divided, you know, in this day and time. Because even with my mother having two jobs, when we were coming up, you know, I would try to say, well, let me go try living with my mom for a little while, you know. I would say my grandmother, she would be heartbroken, but I would give it a try. My mother was so structured and so militant, you know. She came up in the Black Power era, so she was very militant, very structured, very, you know, rigid about time and space, and we couldn't watch television, and we had to read, you know, encyclopedias and dictionaries. That's how my mother was. Yeah, and I would try to go over there and stay with her, but then I'd be like, oh, wait, this is too strict. You know, so now I'm learning balance. Yeah, I'm learning balance, you know. But even with mothers having two jobs in our day, they still talk to us. They still downloaded information. They still shared, you know, things with us about who you were and your identity. But in this day and time, I think that's missing for our youth. And our teenagers, you know, they're not having real conversations. I think that parents are so busy struggling in their inner child that they're sharing information with their children. I hear these young mothers talking about the men they've been with and how much money they asked this nigga for and blah, blah, blah. This, excuse the expression, but this is how they're having these conversations with their teenage girls and teenage daughters, and they're hanging out with them and they're going to the club with them. And it's no more separation between parent and child. So, you know, information and stuff is not valued and held on to and passed on, you know what I'm saying, for generations to come, because it's no real substance to it. It's a bunch of drama and chaos and confusion, and this man is in the bed, and that man is in your bed, and this man is her stepfather, and that man or this woman, or, you know, it's different things going on. You know, they're bringing a lot of different elements, you know, into the household without giving a child the opportunity to grow, to learn. And that wounded parent is passing on those same injuries, you know, to the child, and that child is passing them on to their child. And their child. And it's just breaking us down, you know, generation after generation. We got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, we do. We are handing down a lot of baggage. And I don't have a problem with handing down baggage, because sometimes it teaches your kids to pack light.
Exactly.
You understand? But I think we're not telling them enough. We're not telling them what this baggage do. We're just talking about it. We're not really telling them the outcome of what our baggage did to us. I think we were too proud and some shame, you know?
Yeah.
But I think shame brings our knowledge when you start talking about it.
Exactly.
When you write, when you wrote your very first book, was it published? Because, you know, we all got that
that we've been holding on to. That's my first novel that I've ever written for the public, and yes, it has been published. That's the first one that I ever wrote was published. I'm blessed to be able to come right out the gate with my first novel being a banger and being relevant. 3 years, 4 years down the line, it's still fire, and I'm happy that it has taken off the way it did.
Timeless, because your books do last forever, and they don't go down. Is it because that you write more on a topic more so than time and place?
Absolutely, I think it is more so the lessons that I. In the books, I write on very strong female characters. So a lot of things that I in books is things that I personally feel that I taught, you know, about women, you know, taking, you know, accountability for your actions. In a side position, accountability, the type of relationship that you have established with this man, and live within those boundaries. You know, if you are the main chick or what have you, you know what you got with this man, and he got with you. Maybe take responsibility for be accountable for that relationship, or if you're gonna be in it, if you're not, don't sit around and complain about it. He ain't crap. Well, if he ain't crap, you're still with him, so you ain't crap with him. So it's just a lot of different things I bring to the forefront in the book. And, I do it in a funny way, a slick kind of way, so that anybody can get a lesson from it. And I think those are the things that are timeless.
Yeah. Okay. Did you learn anything from writing your first book about yourself? I learned that I let a lot of who I used to be come out, and I took a look at it, and, you know, like, because I don't curse. So when I read, I'm talking, and I'm in those moments, those characters' minds in their true form. And I'm reading, and I'm like, ooh, I kind of cringe on certain portions because, you know, those are things that I don't do anymore or things that I don't say anymore. And sometimes I'll be like, oh, wow, you know, that's deep. But it's my true self writing in my past feelings, emotion, and character, you know, and people who I knew. I'm writing in their true voices of how I remember them, what I feel. I use the character,
that's a lot of
myself. Yes, it is. I'm really telling, you know, their story from how I remember them from like 9 years old, watching the drug dealers on the block, you know, when they first were out there, how sexy everything looked, watching that money exchange hands, you know, watching people get beat down with golf clubs and stuff, you know, beat to death, you know, shot, you know. For a moment, I'm writing, you know, in those characters and those narratives, you know, in those conditions and circumstances that was going on in the project and in ages. I remember the stress, you know, and the visuals of to men, to women, you know, to families. And I just put it into the books on, you know, what I can remember and what I can feel and what I can taste and smell, you know, in the streets in those times. So, yeah, it helps. It's therapeutic.
And it's really strange when you do that. Wow, mm-hmm. I got a chill. It's really strange when you're bothering me, girl. it's really strange though when you can really smell
mm-hmm.
a memory,
mm-hmm.
and I think mm-hmm. you can incorporate those type of strong senses in any book, in any type of writing, is going to grab. It's going to do its job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's
right.
Almost like passing scent down to somebody else, like, smell it.
mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And are they playing out when you go back in your memory?
Mm-hmm.
Are you watching the movie yourself?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Like, was it attractive? Because
mm-hmm.
it was attractive
yes.
to me.
Yes.
No matter how
Absolutely.
Heinous the crime was, it still was
mm-hmm.
like attractive. And ooh.
Yeah.
And you knew it was wrong.
Yeah.
You know it's wrong
mm-hmm.
now. But
mm-hmm.
when you go back and you think about it, it's almost attractive. And I think
mm-hmm.
that's how people get sucked into that lifestyle, because even though when you know it ain't the right way to live, it's,
mm-hmm.
it's intriguing.
Yeah, it's like it hurts so bad.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I think people stay to find out what's like a book, like what's happening,
yeah.
what's going to happen next.
What's going to happen next, yeah. And, you know, it's like a sore. You know how you had that bruise and it hurts and you just keep pressing it, you know? You know it hurts and you just keep pressing it. You're like, ow, it just hurts so good, you know? And I think that
right.
that is the same feeling. You know, I have a chapter that I wrote in book one, where a friend of ours, Busy, who was a guy around the project, he was about to get out. He had just bought his mother a condo. Like, he was really tired. You know, he had almost had a lot of brushes with death, and he had had a lot of brushes with the penitentiary. He was like, you know what, I'm about to get out. I'm about to take all this money. I'm investing. He was a good dude. You know what I'm saying? He would buy
right.
sneakers and stuff for the basketball players. You know, back in our day, they bought the jerseys. They bought the this, the that. They gave
right.
money. You know, they did different things in the community with the drug money, even though they were selling drugs. Like, you couldn't do it in nobody's grandma porch. Like, it was rules, you know what I'm saying? It was in that day. And he was in the hallway in front of our door, and he got gunned down. You know what I'm saying? I can remember seeing him, and that was the first time I had really saw somebody, you know, aired out. You know, he was, like, shot in his head and everything. Like, you could see the white matter, you know, coming out of the sores and, you know, stuff running from his nose, his ears, like up close and personal, because he was like right on my doorstep.
Damn, maybe?
Yeah, that was crazy. It was crazy, yeah. And my grandmother, I can remember her just screaming, like, shut the door. And I'm like, I couldn't believe it, because I'm like, wow, this is like one of the top dogs just like laid
out. You know, it was crazy. And,
right.
you know, watching other grown men cry, you know, at his feet, like men who you knew was definitely, you know, gun-toting and crazy. And, you know, they were crying, like, with snot and real tears, like they couldn't believe, you know, that this had happened to one of their soldiers. And feeling all of that emotion and pain and, you know, the morning after when it's eerie. You know how when you wake up and it's eerie and the air is thick? You know, and it's like tension and nobody's saying anything. It's like everybody's talking with their eyes, like the sorrow and the pain is just in everybody's eyes and no one's saying a word. Like that, those feelings, like I try to put those emotions into the stories when I'm telling them, you know, when my characters are going through those moments, you know, with death and pain and hatred and being afraid. So, yeah, I just try to bring them to them as real as I possibly can. Mm-hmm.
Where do you think the rules went?
Because
there were rules. You just didn't do certain things, and the most heinous dude, you know, the most dude that you would drop a body in front of children. You know what I'm saying? Still have rules. Where do you think? Where do you think the rules went?
I think the rules went into the penitentiaries with all those, you know, fallen soldiers. When they round up, you know, those last few batches, I think the rules went in with them. And I think that this generation is more fearless than any generation. I think that the thing that's lacking is guidance and direction. I think that if this generation definitely had guidance and direction, the world would not be able to play with them because they're fearless.
Right.
They are numb. You know what I'm saying? They're being born without certain inhibitions. You know what I'm saying? They're being born without certain feelings to death and to pain and to agony. You know, certain things don't even matter to this generation. They are so fearless and they're so courageous. You know what I'm saying? They have so much energy and so many ideas bubbling inside of them, but they lack guidance and direction.
Right. Wow. I think,
you know, it's just crazy. You know what I'm saying? How they're being created. Their fathers and mothers done did prison time. So you dealing with having all of that, all those emotions. And then, they, you know, a lot of people are using a lot of different kind of drugs. So you got a whole cocktail in the sperm of the man that is creating these seeds. You know what I'm saying? These seeds that are being born with all kinds of emotional wounds and physical wounds and, you know what I'm saying, eternal wounds. And this generation is just so out of control with those feelings and those emotions of even the pain of their parents. And you got to remember, we still bear the scars of the slave. You know what I'm saying? Nothing has changed in that aspect.
Right.
So if you're talking about generations of pain, of murder, of death, you know what I'm saying? What we're seeing today is child's play compared to the mass murder that was going on 400 years ago, 300 years ago, 200, 100 years ago, 1964, when you was trying to fight to get on a bus, when you was trying to fight to go to school and have equal opportunity, you know what I'm saying, of marriage and of education and of voting rights, just in 1964. So you're talking about hundreds of years of murder, pain, disappointment are in the children today. That's where the rules went. You know what I'm saying? That's where the rules went.
I think there's so much awareness about all that, about our journey. And I think that youth today are mad. They're upset. And the sad thing is they're upset at us. I think they're upset at parents. They're upset at their newly acquired grandmothers that are still in their 40s or 30s.
They're disappointed.
They're mad, and they they think we owe so much to them, and that they were deprived of new direction, and they were deprived of foundation and substance and teachings. You know, because they hear you say it. They hear the media say, "Yous are stupid. Yous are dumb. You're not going to be nothing. You're going to be a product of your environment." Even though the environment
is really
is a product.
I think it's great that you have the foundations that you do have. Tell us about what is it, the prodigal sons.
Prodigal Sons and Daughters was something that was started in the prison system with, you know, Wahida's husband and a lot of the different men who were in the prisons when he was in there. My father was in there. My father went in the 1970s. My uncle, you know, a lot of their friends, they all were political prisoners, you know, out there fighting in the streets trying to, you know, win independence, you know, for black people, black men and black women. You know, my father and my mother came up in that era of Islam and, you know, that radical thought of trying to, you know, have something for us. And in that prison system, they were able to find a solace in trying to reform, you know, each other first and then share that with other inmates, you know, with self-control, character development, you know, being able to control your temper and being able to have money and do different things for yourself once you go on the other side of the wall. So that became the mission, you know, on they trying to get out of the prison system with them all doing life sentences. You know, when we get out, let's reform. You know, let's stop this recidivism. Let's stop, you know, seeing people use this as a revolving door coming in and out. Let's help people reconnect with their families and, you know, be able to have those families know that they have made an atonement for their mistakes, and they want to come out and be fathers and be mothers and husbands and wives and, you know, be able to, you know, get back into the community and be a productive element, you know, versus a detriment. So, yeah, they started that, and when they came home in the 90s, they put it into full force, you know, getting into the streets, mentoring the gangs, working with the youth, working with the mayors and, you know, different people of the cities. And trying to, you know, do some good things. So, yeah, that's how that came about.
So, wow. I can't believe you went from drop off the boss lady. This is remarkable.
I tried.
Tell people by, you know, just taking a liking to people and say, well, I like her. And I like her mindset, but you really don't know. All of that was in their mind. All of that.
Yes, all of that.
I'm saying, so you're very in touch and in tune with what's going on in your community and what it's lacking and almost the fixtures. You almost know the fixtures of how to pull stuff back together again. Will you, will we be seeing like Nene for president? Or you know what I'm saying? That people think that's a joke. My mother is she's always been into politics since we were young, like real young.
And
she's a senator now. And she was just, you know what I mean? She was handing out pamphlets then. You know, and now she's on the Senate seat. Well, will we be seeing Nene as alderman or state rep or
is it quite? You know what? You never know. You know, I work with a lot of judges. I used to work in the DA's office. Those were my interns in undergrad, and I worked with a lot of judges, and they were like, she's going to be the next Supreme Court justice. They used to say stuff like that, you know, because how diligent I am working with them. I'm not sure. You know, I'm going to go, you know, wherever the Lord leads me. I'm definitely going to have a nonprofit organization. I'm in the works of doing that now. I'm going to be working with women and teenagers. I'll be doing that really, really soon. I'm putting that together. So I know I'll be doing that. I'm not sure how political I will be because I'm inside of the law and I know a lot of what goes on. And sometimes when you know too much, you can't go too forward.
Wow.
So, you know, I will see where it takes me because I've sat on both sides, you know, of that table. So I'll see where it takes me, but I'm going to use all my knowledge, all my political, you know, connections and people that I work with to be able to, you know, spearhead my organization and get, you know, the support I need to make sure I can do what I want to do as far as helping women and children with my organization that I'm getting started right now. So we'll see.
This program of my corporate and women and children, is it to keep families together or is it, are they going to be separate entities?
Well, for my youth program, that's going to be more like a dormitory type school, young girl. And working with the women, it's probably going to start with women who don't have support systems in place, those who don't have things in place to help with their children. And we're going to take them through different levels of intelligence to bring them up to a level where they can provide for themselves and do for themselves, and they have an education and a trade and so forth and so on, and be able to, you know, work with their children. We're not going to separate mothers from children. No, we won't do that. We will work within that sphere. But I have nothing planned yet for married families and couples. I'm basically focusing on, you know, our injured and our wounded women and children in society.
Okay. So I guess you'll be using that template that you have in place right now for your daughter, because the structure behind that is almost like it's the structure that I would assume that you would be incorporating into your youth program. Now,
absolutely.
What made you homeschool your daughter?
I felt like this. When she got to a particular age, which was about 2 years ago, it just wasn't challenging enough for me, number one. Number two, it's too many outside influences that teach her opposite of what I teach her. She's very strong willed, and her personality and her character is what I've given her. However, I just don't like the way the school system is going, you know, how they teach, what they teach. And since I'm home, you know, working, we're able to travel. You know, we're all over the place, up and down the coast, all over the place. And I'm able to take her where I want to take her and teach her what I want to teach her to make her prepared for, you know, the woman that I'm growing her into. And I don't need anything opposing that, what I'm trying to do. So I have her here with me. She's able to travel and learn and grow, and I can protect her. You know, it's too much going on. Kids running up in school, shooting one another, doing all kinds of shenanigans. And I just feel like it's not for her at this point in time. So, yeah, I have her.
So how does she develop socially on her age level?
Well, for one, she has a huge family. We have a huge family on her father's side and on my side. So it is a million and one kids her age, and they're all homeschooled. So they talk, they, you know, they have their own social entities. And then we travel a lot. So she meets a lot of people from different countries. She has pen pals and other foreign countries and stuff that she stays up to talk to sometimes through email, because they're on their way to school when she's on her way to bed. So it all, you know, it all pans out. And she's a very mature child. So she's not a kid.
I guess so, when she said she knew who she was.
Yeah, what? Yeah, she knows who she is. So she doesn't, like, she's not kitty. She's like, Mom, she don't have time for kids, because she said kids play too much. Like, she's that type of child. Like, she doesn't like to deal with immaturity. She likes to talk to adults. So that's how she is. So she doesn't really care about that social entity, because she said, you know, kids her age are not on her level. So we have nothing to talk about. So, you know, she has reading groups and things that she's in online, because she reads a lot of John Green novels and different things like that. So she finds people who are interested in what she's interested in. I screen the situation, make sure that it is a child. And then, you know, I can always tell, because if you say, I want to be connected with you, how can I be connected with you outside of this? And then they say, my mom doesn't allow me to pass out my number, or so-and-so, then I know it's a child. Yeah. It's certain ways you have to tell, you know, because other kids are homeschooled and stuff around the country. Yeah, you have to know the lingo. So I'm always introduced, and I monitor it well. And it's like about two or three of them. One is in Denmark, and another one is in another place, I think London. But, yeah, that's how she does. And she has it under control. Yeah, she's good. She's not into boys and none of that mess. She's just into herself. So, yeah, I'm blessed.
Okay,
it could be worse.
I got blessed, I think, with my last child, and she's 17, and extremely bright. She's an advocate for herself. She ain't even know about it. she really fight for herself. And
yeah,
was pulled out of public school in the fifth grade, and yeah, fifth grade when a charter school started here called Achievement First. And I was a little skeptical, and you know, but she wasn't in a good school, and she was literally like getting these grades that came so easy to her. She stopped studying.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So I said, okay, we're gonna get this. Teacher noticed it. Like, she's getting these grades with no effort. So when the school started, she started going there, and it was their first year. Excuse me, when I tell you, the school was a blessing up until a certain point. It was a blessing because everything was college bound. Everything.
Mm-hmm.
Everything. Fifth grade, teaching college bound. You understand? Preparation for
mm-hmm.
college. It was drilled in their heads. And it also, not just college bound, be responsible for your actions. They were responsible
absolutely.
For anything. They didn't tap me
absolutely.
And say, it was you, this is your responsibility. You understand? They made them self-sufficient. So when we came, I moved out to California in December 12th. And when I transferred my daughter from that school, a month before we left, we changed our moving date. So she had to, I pulled her out of school too soon. So she ended up going to our public high school. And she's like, Mom, these kids are dumb.
I said, they were fun.
Dumb. Dumb.
Oh, dumb. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
My sister was the same way.
Mm-hmm. Believe it. Like, she's
mm-hmm.
like, I'm
because a difference. Mm-hmm.
Very much.
It's a big difference. My sister was the same way. I had her all in good schools, and we went to the inner city, and she was raising her hand in class, and they was looking at her like she was crazy. And yeah, she was
how
like,
you
know
that?
What, I can't do this. Yeah, I took her out. She said, I can't do this. I took her out at 15. She took her GED and went to college. And that's it. She was like, I ain't going to be able to do this. Yeah, she was like, I'm not learning anything. She was like, the stuff that they're doing in eighth and ninth grade, I was doing in third grade in the schools that I was in. And I was like, wow.
My daughter was teaching her teacher how to write summaries and references from information that you got off the internet. She said, where did you learn that?
That's because they don't teach. That's another reason why our youth are ill-prepared, is because they're not teaching them the basic formulas to mathematics and phonetics. They're teaching them sight words. They're teaching them test material, and they're teaching them just to pass the test. Like, they're not teaching them any formulas, you know, straight from the beginning. You know, math is consistent, reading is consistent, phonetics is consistent, and that's why you have a lot of the mistakes that we make and have even in urban literature, because people don't know about verbs and adverbs and junctions and transitional statements and transitional words, and you know what I'm saying, that it's only one space behind a period when you're writing a novella, and it's two spaces when you're writing an essay. Like, different things like that are missed, because from about the mid-90s up until now, they're not teaching them phonetics and how to use words and how to take things out of context and put it back together. And none of that, the things that we learned, they're not learning. So that's another reason why you have a disconnect, and they feel so disappointed and betrayed, because they are so behind everybody else in the world. Like, our kids are not learning at the capacity they should be to actually even be a force to be reckoned with in the Americas, for real. It's crazy. They start off behind the eight ball, and they're always trying to catch up, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, it's crazy, unless you have to be teaching your own kids. Go ahead.
People think that's an understatement, an overstatement, more so when we say our schools are crappy. They're not teaching our children. They're not teaching our children. They're not teaching our children white kids are getting a better education. But they're not even getting educated. They're not even getting educated. The public
but you know the difference? The difference is with their kids in a classroom versus our children because, you know, I've lived in the mountains of PA since my daughter was two, and I lived out there up until I'm coming to Georgia a few months ago, and the education system is superior in that everything is new and technologically savvy. The classrooms are not crowded. Whereas in the urban area, you'll easily have 35 children to a classroom. You're only supposed to have 25, so now you have 10 extra children. Whereas in the, you know, in the white schools, they may have 15 children to a classroom. You know what I'm saying? Where the teacher can actually pay attention to everybody and actually address their needs. In urban schools, you have a setting. Yes,
right.
Exactly. You have a setting where everybody has to sit down and be quiet and we're all on one thing. In the suburban schools that my children were in, they had stations where they're able to pick which portion of the school day they want to do first. Maybe they want to do math in the morning, get it out the way. They want to do English later. They had bean bags all around the room where you can lay down on these little things and do your work. And you know what I'm saying? Maybe some kids do their work better laying on their stomach and tapping their hand and putting on headphones and listening to music. And the teacher is just in the room, and she's just interacting in a glorious setting, and everybody's excited because they picked and chose what they wanted to do for the day in between structured instructional sessions. But outside of that, it was a relaxed, you know what I'm saying, fluidity, which helps with learning. And you just don't have that, you know, in the urban setting. The teacher spends all day being a babysitter and chastising. When it's time to get to the lesson, she's wore out, A, B, she doesn't have the attention of the students. C, now it's time to leave, so she don't even give a damn. So this here, take these papers home with you, and the kid get home like, I don't know this homework. We didn't do this today. You know what I'm saying? That was a major – your parents be like, homework is a reflection of what you did in school all day. So if you don't know this, then something happens from 8 o'clock to 3 o'clock because you're supposed to know this. But – they don't have a chance to teach the lesson because they spend all day being a disciplinarian. And, again, these are the kids. Are we talking about the breakdown and where did the rules go? That's another thing that adds to the breakdown in our communities and why we have our children just running wild, I believe.
People wouldn't even believe what happens in these classrooms. My last month in Connecticut, I did – I was subbing. I'm a substitute teacher. And I said, you know, I want to touch, you know, every age bracket because I have a history, about 12-year history of working with youth at risk. These kids are not the same, honey, as 10 years ago. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
I had a little boy that was walking. He was in the eighth grade, walking on top of the desk. I couldn't get him to get down no matter what I did. I probably gave him $5 and he still wouldn't listen to me. It was, I said, no, Nene, I'm like, I can't do this. And I had a lot of patience when it come to kids. I could not fathom anybody's children coming to school. Honey, I had a little girl ask me, do you know what even head is? Out of all the things you can ask your substitute teacher, that's the question. I said, I'm done. Then I went to high school, figuring there'd be a little more, you know. I couldn't get the kids to take the headphones out their ears. They were giving to children 7 minutes of wind down time, they called it, and it was in the middle of class, and the bell would ring. This little buzz would go off, and you had 7 minutes to do whatever you wanted to do. Now, explain to me, if your rule is you can't wear headphones, why would you let them do that in those 7 minutes? You know how long it took me to get them to take their headphones back off? It's a mess. It's a mess.
You know what? The thing I think that is missing, again, in our education system, you said a lot, I heard, in that was that we a lot of times try to get them to do what we want them to do instead of trying to cultivate what it is that they are good at. I deal with my company and everything the same way I deal with how I am when I mentor the youth. When somebody comes to me and say they want to work with me, the first thing out of my mouth is, what are you good at? You know what I'm saying? What can you do? What would you be happy with doing? And I listen to them, and I let them tell me, and then I try to find a place for them within my organization that they'll be doing something that they can, A, make money at, and B, be happy at doing and be proud of. And I run a classroom the same way because I substitute also. And when I come into a classroom, I just chill. I come in, I look around, and I recognize and I point out to myself who's the strongest in the room. And I get those strong individuals, and now I structure. I run the classroom like a business. I say, okay, who's good at math? And maybe two or three people will raise their hands. I say, y'all sit right here. Who's good at reading? And then they'll sit here. I'll say, well, who's good at art? And I'll sit those kids in one area. I don't care if they wear their headphones and stuff. That don't bother me. And I now structure the whole day around a corporation. This is a corporation now, and this is how I'm running this. You guys are going to figure out the numbers. What's our product? So I get them bubbling. What's the product? What are we going to be doing? Okay, you guys are going to draw the building. You guys are going to give me the budget. You guys are going to tell me how the employees are going to do their lunch, their this, their that. So I structure the whole room around an organization. So every day when they came into the room, they just went to their area. They got their paper. They got their this. And I incorporated the English, the math, the spelling, the language, the research, the computers, everything around what was going to make the whole room happy and have me at peace. You see what I'm saying? And they were doing exactly what it was that they wanted to do. Huh?
You about to clone Nene Capri, y'all.
And they didn't want me to leave. I had to go back. And they was like, no, don't leave, don't leave. I said, I got to. After 2 weeks, I had took their mind to a whole different level. And that group of children still stay in contact with me to tell me when they graduated. They said I gave them, such a wonderful gift at how I brought their gifts out of them. But, that's the thing. A lot of times you try to run people. You have to let people do what they're good at, what they're happy at. And they'll do it with a cheerful heart, and they'll do it you want them to, and they'll do it when you don't want them to. You know what I'm saying? And I'm blessed that my staff has that ability and working with me. My staff and my family members, and, I do the same thing in mentoring. I let people do what they're good at. And then when you do that, in those moments is when you get brilliance, and you get greatness. And I think that's what people miss. They're always trying to dim a person's light so that it fits into their formula of what shine is. But I think you just have to let people polish up their gifts and, do what they're good at, and then they'll be great. That's just my
I'm so sorry. Let me tell you something. I just want to apologize to we had about 6 callers and Q.
I like to talk to them if they still answer.
I done got Cindy on them. I done kept Nene. I done kept Nene to myself. They talked about some
of I'm so sorry.
You get so wrapped up in this and the block talk. Especially with, people like yourself, really interesting, right. Somebody to really connect to, listen to, and not just be like, okay, hurry up so I can ask you the next question. Did I say that out loud? But when you get those kind of interviews, you kind of like forget, that this ain't a phone conversation, girl. This is not you talking on the phone. This is a radio show. You have listeners. There are people that have been in queue for 25 minutes. And we only got a minute left.
Okay, I'd like to talk to somebody if you want me to.
I know! I think I'm pulling in area code 202. Area code 202. How are you? I'm so sorry.
Hello, how you doing? How you doing? I'm good.
Okay,
I was just wanted to comment on. My name is Marcus.
Hi, Marcus.
How you doing? I'm a teacher and a published author as well. So I just wanted to comment on what you were saying. I work at a alternative high school with primarily boys who are probably one step away from prison. So I do really understand what you're I do really understand what you're saying, as far as teaching them, because it's like, it's rough, man. You know, at the end of the day, I'm tired, because it's it's so hard to reach them when they got so many other outside influences. You know, I was that kid like you were talking about. I was the guy with the 150 IQ that hated school. You know, it's ironic now that I'm a teacher, man. But I really just want to say I do agree with a lot of what you were saying as far as teaching methods, because the real reason I got this job was because I'm already a published author, and the guy was like, and the principal was like, we need people like you. But it's really hard teaching, because the kids I work with are far from dumb. You know what I'm saying?
Hey,
I told my students the other day, I'm studying to be a stockbroker, and I told my students the other day, if you guys can go out here and make $1,000 selling crack, then why can't you invest in stocks? And no one teaches them that. And they were more interested in learning about stocks than learning what the school was teaching them. And the funny thing is that the white teachers don't like me because of my teacher's method. They don't like me because if it wasn't for my record exposure, I'd probably be doing the same thing. I got lucky enough and blessed enough to, after I got out of jail, to get a record expungement, and now I'm teaching. But I just want to say that I really agree with what you ladies were saying about our educational system. I was teaching like 6 months, and I see like a deficiency in it already.
Yeah, you'll be all right. But we thank you. We thank you for listening in, and we thank you for your comments, and we thank you for, you know, being courageous enough to take on a position to help enlighten our young minds. And, you know, we implore you for it, and continue to be successful.
Thank you.
Yeah, definitely.
You have a good evening.
Yes, sir. You have a good evening. That's right. And make sure you one click you some Nene Capri right on Amazon.
Oh, man.
Get it in there, Nene. Get it in there.
I got you. I've read all your books.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate you.
No problem.
Yes, have a good one.
You
take care.
Thank you.
Thank you. Wow, that's powerful.
I can't stand you, Diddy.
I can't stand you.
Okay. That's not a little brain. We don't wear it to overtime. I ain't mad
either.
Honey, I mean, because I really think people don't understand the importance of our youth. You know, we label them so fast, you know, before you get to know them, before we even get to understand them, to get to know them. I think my daughter is... she's a stickler about labels, and when her slate gets tainted, like when she meet new folk, and she goes to the left on them, or because she's known to be smart, but she's an introvert. But when she when her little slate gets tainted, she doesn't know what to do. She doesn't know how to clean it off again. I have to really sit her down and be like, "That's just a mistake." Those things happen. And I'm going to get judged by that. But you're not. You get judged by the come up. Not the fall down.
Exactly. My best friend, she's phenomenal. You know, and she said the other day that her new thing of the year is I either win or I learn. I don't fail. You know, that's Miss Keisha Steele. I know you had a time or two to be in contact with her. But she's that's my baby girl. I love her to death. She is such a sweetheart, and she is one of the reasons why I am who I am, because she stays encouraging me. And that's what she said. That's her new thing for the year. You know, I have adopted it myself. She said, I either win or I learn. I never fail. You know, I am not going to lose. So, you know, people have to be able to incorporate those types of things into their mantra, and be able to live by a certain code. You know, everybody has to have a code. It can't be Felicia's code. It can't be Nene's code. You know what I'm saying? It has to be your personal code that you adopt for yourself, and how you're going to live and how you're going to talk and how you're going to walk. And you can't let anything allow you to deviate from such a code.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Regardless, you know, you're going to have all kinds of things. You know what I'm saying? Energy cannot be created or destroyed. You know what I'm saying? And it only is disturbed by outside force. People have to stop letting outside forces disturb their fluidity of movement. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. People who don't matter, people who you don't know, you know what I'm saying? People who are just passing you by. You know, why are you so upset about the way they feel? If it's honest to them in that moment and how they feel, let them have that. You know what I'm saying? I'm never concerned about how people feel or what they think and what they have to say for what. You know what I'm saying? That's too much energy. You know what I'm saying? I have too much energy I have to put into creating. So I do not care. You know what I'm saying? And by you, you know, either speaking of me illly, and I'm not even paying you any attention, it's only taken away from your creativity and your blessings. You know what I'm saying? Lord trying to bless you.
But
you over here looking
in
my window. I don't do it.
People think that they ride the coattail or stuff like that. They don't understand that there's no help in that for yourself. There's no help in that. There's no help. That's why I don't beef, because there's no. It's time wasted. For one, I don't ever underestimate anybody's reach,
mm-hmm.
and I don't care.
It's not necessary. People are too grown. It's like you're too grown for that. So I don't have time for it. I'm not finna go back and forth with you. I don't have time for that. You know what I'm saying? It's like we are in business. And I think a lot of people forget that we're in business. You know what I'm saying? We're out here trying to make money. We're entertainers. Things we do is entertaining. We're in business. You know, you should be making wise business choices and decisions. You should be reading contracts. You should be paying attention to what's going on. You should be studying as much as you can in the genre of activity that you sign up for, whatever it is, if it's promotions, if it's editing, if it's literature,
right.
if it's publishing,
if it's
radio, know your audience, know your job, know what you're doing, and become 100% a professor and such. And you become so engulfed in that activity that anything anybody else is doing, you don't even see. You know what I'm saying? You don't even care about. You know, people, a lot of times, they're so caught up in this social media world. Like, that's all that exists to them is what's being said there. But there are so many wonderful things going on in the industry, in the world, period. You know what I'm saying? That people are involved in, and they don't even see that. You know what I'm saying? And they don't even care. You know what I'm saying? Bill, you know, people, Bill Gates and your Russell Simmons and all those people with a lot of money, do you really think they care about what people think and feel about their life, their love life,
not
their sex life, their money life, their whatever, the kind of shoe? They don't care. You know what I'm saying? They are making money. They are making decisions and choices that's going to be the legacy of their family. You know what I'm saying? They're not wasting any energy.
All at the same time.
Yeah, and you don't have time for that. If it don't make no check, they're not even involved. Like, you spend hours on phones or in inboxes or whatever talking about people, but did you get a check? Like, how much money did you make? You know what I'm saying? How many books did you sell? You know what I'm saying? Like, how much, you know, how many business deals did you close? You know what I'm saying, with all of that? Zero. You went to sleep not a cent richer, only more wiser in somebody else's business that you really still don't know because you weren't there. So it's hearsay, so you don't have a clue. But you did not become 1 cent richer. You did not enhance your emotional, physical, spiritual bank account, nor did you enhance your physical bank account. So you became no richer.
Yeah.
So I can't see how any of that
Badness.
Even bothers me. I'm so not concerned. Yeah, I'm so not concerned with any of that. You know what I'm saying? If you like it, I love it. Have at it, because somebody has to do the things that people hate on, and somebody has to do the hating. So everybody has a job, but all I'm saying is spend some time worrying about yourself, concerning yourself with you and your business and what's going to get you, you know, financially stable so that your children and grandchildren don't have to worry about anything, because my checks are only signed to me and they won't make you any richer and vice versa. So that's all I'm saying. People just need to, you know, they just need to concern themselves with them and what they have going on, and people would be a whole lot happier.
What are you offering under Boss Lady Publishing? What is it that makes your publishing company stand out?
I think that you know, first of all, we're just getting started. So, you know, we're all in our learning phase. You know, I'm not going to jump up here like, you know, yeah, I'm the publisher of the year. Absolutely not. I'm just getting in this realm of activity. But the main thing I'm doing, firstly, is building a team of women and that are grown, number one. And we don't have the gossip and the back and forth. Like I always say, everybody's married. And they have, you know, lives, and they have children, and they have family, and they have jobs, and they're dedicated to their craft. So that's my first thing, working with people who are mature enough to handle business, you know what I'm saying, who are knowledgeable. You know, my team came to me already knowledgeable, and I work with them and cultivate them and try to teach them, you know, what I know about, you know, like I said, the fluidity of language and transitional statements and trying to let them have their own voice so they don't sound like Nene Capri in a book and in their writing, but giving them more so that each book they grow. You know what I'm saying? That's all I can expect, that your second book will be better than your first book. I don't expect you to come right out the gate. If you come right out the gate on a five, good. You know what I'm saying? But this is about progression. You know what I'm saying? About learning and about progressing so that by the time you get to your fifth and your sixth novel, you have learned so much that you can carry your novel without a whole lot of edits and rewrites and confusion about how to connect. How to show and don't tell. You know what I'm saying? So that's my main thing. I want to just give them a knowledge of what I already know, help them to grow, you know, so when they leave me, because I'm not trying to hold them to me if they want to do something better, I want that for them.
Right.
But I want to give them the best I can, you know, while I have them on my team and in my camp. And, you know, hopefully I'll be a blessing to them and they'll move on and do great things, you know, within their career. You know, so that's my basic thing, to give them what I have, so that they could be, you know, good writers and know the business. That's about it, because I'm not trying to rule over anybody's career. I'm not trying to create a gang or some sort of following. You know, I'm just working with authors who are like me. I'm their big sister. That's all. I've been in it longer. I know more, and I share it with them on a daily basis. You know, we encourage each other as women and family, you know, if it's issues and we need to talk. And the business stays here. You know, my circle is so small. If somebody says something, I only got to look at two people, so I already know. You know what I'm saying?
I don't
do shenanigans. Yeah. Yeah, it's not even like that. So, yeah, if something gets said, we already know it said it. I said it or you said it. So, you know what I'm saying? It ain't like that. It ain't that big. So, you know, I just don't want no shenanigans. I don't have time for it. So, that's
Are
my main thing. I am taking submissions, but, you know, I like to take my time. So if you in a rush, I'm not the person to, you know, sign up with, because you're not going to submit a book today and it's out tomorrow. I have to read it. I have to let the staff read it, the reading staff. I have to, you know, see if it's something that we want. Can we work with it? If you need work, am I willing to take the time? And then we have to do a proper promotion of you, as well as, you know, the title and the cover, and give it some months to brew, and then here you go, a finished product. Like I was taught and trained, you know, by Wahida. Like, we put out one book a year. That's the school I come from, because it had to be cultivated. It had to go through so many edits. It had to do so much development. Times move a lot faster in this day and time, but I still want to use a lot of those original ideas and preparations that I know work for manuscripts. So, you know,
that's
if
right.
You're in a
and
rush,
make it work.
No, I can't do it. Yeah, I can't do it if you're in a rush. I say do it yourself, you know. I say it because I'm not going to do anything for you that you can't do yourself. And I say just don't skip no steps, you know. Just take your time and, you know, work the necessary process so that you can put out a good novel into the public's hands, because we have beautiful, intelligent readers and they're waiting for good work. So that's all I can say. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Dang.
So, with writing royalty, and all the little entities that you do have your hands in, you have your hands in a lot of pots, man. You're like a super chef. What's next? What you cooking at?
Oh my goodness, I'm doing a little bit of everything. You know, we have, like I said, we do have writing royalty. We have some beautiful celebrities that are coming to us this season. I'm really, really excited about that. This is a beautiful year. So I'm really trying to cultivate writing royalty in our product line. We have a product line coming under Writing Royalty Promotions and Writing Royalty and Boss Lady and Pussy Chat. So we have a line for each one of those particular aspects of our radio station. Because, you know, we have different shows. We have the Scoreboard, which is all sports. We have our Celebrity Nights, which is Wednesdays and Thursdays, which is regular Writing Royalty. And then we have the Pussy Chat, which comes on Friday. So we have a line of items and clothing that's going to come out in correspondence with those different shows. So we have that going. I also have my Boss Ladies, which is my modeling side, which I have signed a few models, which I'll be hosting parties in Atlanta with my models this summer. So I'm doing that, and I have some other things that I'm cooking up that I'm working on, you know, with the D-Street Chronicle bosses. We have some things that's going to pop up out of entertainment and different things. So, yeah, I'm just excited. We have a lot going on. You'll be surprised. This summer is really going to be bubbling.
Oh, I ain't surprised, girl. I ain't surprised. You're like Dexter in the laboratory. You just doing
I know.
But
I know. I guess it is.
It is. No, seriously, because there's a lot of people who hold just as much knowledge, don't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? And you get your blessings when you recycle them, too. I think people forget that you have to give what's been given. You have to give back.
Right.
You have to reach back, too. Get that stuff. People say, I'll get that. I get free books out. I mean, get back. Like, this, like the education part of it. You know, people want to charge it, but when you ask a question, like, 10 cents a click, like...
Wow. I don't have time for that. I will answer a question so quick because it don't take nothing. You know, somebody hit my inbox and asked me for some advice. I give them a quick synopsis on, you know, what I think they would need, and they be grateful for that. It don't hurt me, and it reinforces what you know. You know, the student is the teacher, and the teacher is also a student. So whenever you have to share information, I mean, there are trade secrets. There are things that you have that makes your company run a certain kind of way. Like McDonald's don't tell what's in the special sauce, you know what I'm saying? But at the same time, you know what I'm saying, they don't stop you from coming in and looking around and looking at the ambiance and looking at the aesthetic and looking at the menu, you know what I'm saying, and just seeing how the team functions, you know what I'm saying, on a daily basis. Now, what goes on behind the scenes is for the team. It's for that particular company, you know what I'm saying? However, you have to be able to, like you said, share information and be able to tell people some things. And don't worry about what they're going to do with it. You know, you're sitting around wondering,
what
are they going to
do
with it? What you're going to do is what you're going to do. Yeah.
Right. I think
nobody can do you. It's true, because no matter what I tell you about what I'm about to do, you don't have my mind, you know what I'm saying, or my talent, or my personality, or my connections, or my friends, you know what I'm saying? So you're going to be successful within your realm of activity. I'm going to be successful within my realm of activity, right? So it's not going to hurt me, and you should want to see, you know what I'm saying, your brother or your sister up. You know what I'm saying? And who cares if they don't shout you out or they don't reach back and help you? You did what you had to do in order to release your spirit, in order to release your blessing.
Can I get two
And that's
people?
All that matters.
Can I get two people? I hope somebody's listening. I mean, for real. People really need to understand that. People ask me, well, Felicia, how do we push in the share button on such and such magazine? Or how do you going to talk about such and such a radio show, you got your own. Because what I do is what I do, even with the magazine, there's a lot of them out there. And I promote We Magazine, and I promote Sir with Big Mo, and I promote The Buzz with Tremaine, because you're supposed to. There's enough. This ain't the block. This is enough. There's enough. This is like the 90s in the crack epidemic. It's enough crackheads. It's enough readers. There's enough there's enough authors. There's enough to go around. And what I do and what I bring is not what what the buzz brings. They just mm-hmm. and, you know what I'm saying? They add on to what I don't even know nothing about, and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? We and I'm not cookish either, so I don't have to worry about that. I don't have to worry mm-hmm. about because I got this click. You know what I mean? That I'm only circulating within this certain realm. I'm not going to talk mm-hmm. to whoever. I don't care who it is. And they don't have to be Mimi Capri, and they don't have to be Zane. They don't have to be those people. They could be Johnny Come Lately. They could be anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Because right. they're shining for everybody. There's room out there for everybody. And they
really
get back
is.
And we get back. Right. Keep me busy. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah.
Keep me busy. And I'm going to mm-hmm. work according to my ethics, and I'm standing firm on whatever I do. I don't, and like, period, it's very little I apologize for. I might
mm-hmm.
explain, but it's very little that I apologize.
I don't mind apologizing. Myself personally, I don't mind, and I apologize to, I don't even apologize to kids. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, I'm from here. I know who I am. I know what I stand for. And I would rather give you what you need so that you can move forward, because maybe
right.
I offended you and I didn't know that I offended you, because sometimes we get into our id, as we say in philosophy, which is like your inner child.
Right.
And that is your selfish self. That is your self-perseverant self. That is your childlike nature that
mm-hmm.
only sees what's
mm-hmm.
in your realm of activity. And sometimes in that childlike personality, we can offend because, hey, I want the cake. I want it right now. Oh, you wanted some? Sorry, I didn't ask you. You know what I'm saying? But I knew what I wanted. And sometimes we get like that. And we have to be,
as
adults, big enough to apologize. Yes, the ego. Yeah, the ego is a son of a bee. You know what I'm saying? And it will stop you from growing. You know what I'm saying? Because me apologizing to you is not for you. It's for me. You know what I'm saying? It's for me. It's so that I can stay humble. It's so that I can stay grounded. It's so that I can continue to move forward in my blessing and in my change. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm walking in my change, and every day it's a struggle to stay in your change because I'm still
yeah.
in it. I've been in it for 20-something years, and a lot of times it's tested. A lot of times it's tested. But it's tested so that I can confirm to myself the oaths that I made to me, and those are personal ones. And within those oaths are, you know what I'm saying, making amends for my mistakes, you know, apologizing when I'm wrong. You know what I'm saying? Not wanting to put, you know, hurt on another person if I can help it. Because sometimes it's in ignorance. It's not even on purpose. Oh, my bad. You know
right.
what? I'm sorry. Pardon me. You know what I'm saying? But that's for me. It ain't for you. It's for me. But it's also to help you, because sometimes a person may need that so that they can move forward. However, I'm never too big to apologize or to say that I'm wrong. And that is a growth in character.
It's
a growth in character.
I understand.
Mm-hmm.
I'm never too big to
mm-hmm.
I don't think anybody should be too big to apologize and
right.
Or to admit wrong. But in the
mm-hmm.
sense, admitting wrong when it's not accepted.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
If you admitting like, oh, yeah, my bad, like, oh, I did that, let me explain.
Mm-hmm.
It is the step to apology.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but when you get, when that step is taken, then it makes it hard.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it hard. Apologize, and then you really
Child.
Don't want to because you're not sorry now.
You know, he's like, you know, I don't feel like being sorry. I don't feel like, but you know what? I'm such a move on type individual. I don't even think that long past the process of the sorry. I don't even care what happens with it after that. Like, as I said it, I'm done. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not holding on to it.
Yes.
Just like if I have to check you, like if I have a problem with you, I call you. Like, I'm not the internet type or whatever. I'd rather have your phone number and I'm going to talk to you right in your face when I see you or on the phone. Let's get this out into the air. You know, open up some dialogue, because maybe we misunderstood each other, because language and stuff becomes misinterpreted. And sometimes a person makes you are doing them a certain kind of way because of the way you came off in a text message or, you know, in a voice message
right.
or you're going through something.
It,
you know what I'm saying?
Altered. Yeah.
Yeah, so you should always take right. it. Yeah, you should always take it to a person. And sometimes we so, you know, we so grown, we too grown. You know what I'm saying? You'd be like, you just be all in one. But, you know, you just have to be man enough and woman enough, you know, to accept faults and stuff and get through them, you know, and grow, you know, and don't stagnate yourself. Because you caught up in somebody else's feelings, because I'm not letting you take me over there. You mad, you know what, you go ahead and be mad, you know, because I'm not, and I'm not, see, I'm not even going over there with you, because I'm not even going that way. You know what I'm saying? So I'm not going that direction. You going left, I'm not going left, I'm going right. So you stay over there with that and enjoy. And enjoy. I have to add that part. And enjoy. Because I don't have time.
Right.
I just don't have time.
Right.
Yeah, have
right.
fun. You know what I'm saying? Have fun. Yeah. But it's all good. You know what I'm saying? I'm
yeah.
happy that, you know, you had me out here. And I thank the
yeah.
listeners
there's
and, you know, everybody who hung in there. I love them.
There's a lot of
I love my trappers. I love them
yes.
to death. I love them. I love every, you know, I love everybody that's supporting this movement of literature. You know, what we are doing have, you know, black women, you know, black men and, you know, our youth reading. You know what I'm saying? They're reading. And so what if it's a little of this, a little of that? You know, it's worse things going on in American households than what we put in our books. You know what I'm saying? They need to worry about straightening that out, you know, and it's real. You know what I'm saying? And we're writing about real things, but they're into literature. Yeah, it's not that serious. I mean, yeah. So, yeah, honestly, but we... It is. It really is. It really is. And if Stephen King's novels is not making people want to be serial killers, our novels, you know, shouldn't be geared to saying we're trying to make people crackheads and go bad. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, honestly, knock it off.
Spending your busy time, because you know we've been talking for an hour and a half. And
I thank you for having me for that long.
I really appreciate it. And you must come back when the Pussy Trap 4 comes out. I like that word. And please, you have to let us know when the audio for Pete
to others to book. I sure will. I will let them know. And part 4 is already out. It is live in rare form on Amazon. So if you have already read the Pussy Trap series 1, 2, and 3, part 4 is live now. Also, Tainted, Lies, Fear, and Death. And get ready for Tainted 2, Love, Deception, and Murder. It's about to go down. Get ready for it. And follow me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. I'm on all social media. Everywhere I'm at, I'm Nene Capri all over the place. That's that branding code right there. Always be the same everywhere you go. That way they can find you. Hit me anytime.
I know that's right, Nene.
Yes.
So I am thankful, very thankful for having you. And this won't be the last time that you come to the platform, I hope. I'd like to thank you. Thank you for the listeners that were patient with me and stayed on the line and waited. And good old Marcus, they got to come through. And I appreciate
you. Yes, thank you so much.
So,
thank you,
Nene. And you stay blessed and you keep encouraging through your pen.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. And you be blessed as well. Good night.
Good night. You've heard it, guys. That was Nene Capri. We have gone into overtime, honey. This is the after show. Do you hear me? This is 30 minutes after the show. I'm trying to tell you, we have learned so much tonight from Miss Nene Capri. Almost didn't want to let her go. I'm trying to keep her kidnapped and held hostage. But, you know, there was so much information for you guys in this segment. There's so much passion behind someone's pen, somebody's pain, somebody's history. People need to understand when they listen to this segment that there's a comeback for everybody. There's a turnaround for everybody. There's no such thing as being deadlocked. There's no such thing as someone not being able to change their lives. And I think we also like to believe that that we're tired of hearing change is going to come. Because change is not going to come. Change is here. Change is now. Change is happening right now. And it starts with the format of living that Nene is exposing her daughter to. We have to take a stand.
We have to take a stand in our own homes and stop worrying about other people's households or how other people run their lives. Because once we all start running ours, we'll all be on one accord. And our children will be brighter, they'll be smarter, and they will be prepared for every and anything. And they will know themselves. And this is all done through literature. This is all done through writing. This is all done through reading. This is all done through writing and reading because it taps into the self, into the psyche. It taps into the individual. People who read a lot tap into other people's feelings. Now you know how to walk in other people's shoes. You understand that there is more to it than meets the eye. And, I've learned quite a bit myself just being able to talk to people like Nene and people who are new in the industry who see more because they're hungrier and they don't have that film over their eyes that's left from burnout of the industry of everything that's so negative that's brought out. And a lot of people tend to draw that in more than anything else. But there's so much positivity going on in black literature. There's so much positivity that is stemming off of urban fiction, street knowledge. And this segment tonight is the poster child for it. And I'd like to thank Nene again for extending her time Let's Talk Urban, because that's what we do here. We talk urban.
You're tuned in to Let's Talk Urban with host Felicia Bradshaw
and Urban Grapevine Magazine Project.
Your number one source for the hottest author in urban fiction talk. Get put on. Right. Book it at let's.talk.urban1@gmail.com. Boom. I'm